himself in the third person. He doesn't say, I'm situated in everyone's senses. He says the Supreme Lord is situated. Section of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 30 to chapter 18, is dealing with jnana, knowledge. Generally, this term jnana means knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit. So I think by now we can all see that this is very much the predominant theme that we've encountered so far. First of all, knowledge about the difference between matter and spirit in terms of kshetra and kshetrajna, the difference between the field and the knowers of the field. That's the difference between matter and spirit. Then chapter 14, a more detailed analysis of material nature, and along with it also this distinguishing the modes of material nature from the living being and showing the difference between the two. Then chapter 15, the banyan tree. The banyan tree being a reflection of the real tree. So also distinguishing between matter and spirit, or the reflection and the real tree. Then chapter 16, it was contrasting the divine nature with the demoniac nature. The first three verses were explaining the very nice qualities of the divine nature, and then basically the rest of the chapter was giving a very vivid analysis of the demoniac nature. So those divine qualities, Krishna said, they're conducive for liberation. And of course the demoniac qualities, they're conducive for bondage. So again, contrasting matter to spirit, spiritual consciousness to material consciousness. So this is all jnana. Of course, generally at the end of each chapter, Krishna stresses devotional service. Generally stresses devotional service as being the highest form of spiritual activity. So basically this is what we're coming across in this last section of Bhagavad Gita, a lot of jnana. And the same idea is here in the 17th chapter. Again, from a slightly different point of view, each of the chapters has been looking at this subject matter of jnana, the difference between matter and spirit, from slightly different points of view from the chapters before. So again, this chapter is also looking at the difference between matter and spirit, but again from another slightly different point of view. Now, it is looking at this subject of the difference between matter and spirit from, at least on the material side, from the point of view of the modes. And in fact, we'll see that also even in the next chapter, at least part of the 18th chapter, continues along in the same sort of mood, dealing with the three modes and contrasting material life in terms of the three modes with spiritual life. So here, in chapter 17, Krishna, or rather Arjuna, opens the chapter by asking an interesting question that hasn't really arisen yet exactly. That people, there are many people who don't follow the scriptures, but they just act as they feel. Now when we say that they act as they feel, what does that mean? It means that they're predominantly influenced by one of the modes. Of course, the influence of all the modes will be there, but one will be predominant. So according to that predominant mode, they will feel attracted to certain types of activities, foods, worship,
speech, and all sorts of different things, they'll feel attracted to expressing themselves in according to that mode. Not with any relationship to Scripture. Now, of course, we did note what perhaps one of you could inform us. At the end of the last chapter, what did Krishna strongly advise us to do in order to get out of this, in order to avoid the demoniac situation, in order to avoid being entangled in the modes? What did he advise us to do? Yes, very good. Follow Scripture. If you follow Scripture, then you can transcend the modes. So here Arjuna is asking, well, what about those people who don't follow Scripture? So he opens up by asking about their religious activities, their inclinations in terms of religious practices and so on. So how would you, he asks Krishna, how would you classify them? People who don't follow Scripture, but they want to worship. They want to worship someone, something. So would you say they're in goodness, passion, or ignorance? Then Krishna explains that they may be in either, or they may be in any one. It just depends on their nature. Just depends on their nature. So, let us have a look then. Verse 2 is basically making the point that according to whatever mode you're in, your main mode, then your faith will be in that mode. Then let's see, in verse 4, Krishna begins describing worship in the mode of goodness. Now this is not according to Scripture. It's just because they feel like this. So people in the mode of goodness, who will they feel like worshipping? Demigods. Not according to Scripture, but just according to their own feelings, family traditions. They'll feel attracted to worshipping some demigod. Like that. You find this in Hinduism a lot. Because their parents have been worshipping a certain deity in a certain way, then the next generation do basically the same thing, and if you ask them why, then the standard answer is, because our parents didn't like this. And what do they say? Mata Pita Guru God. Right? At least that's a well-known Hindu saying. Mata Pita Guru, then God. So what comes from your parents is first. So they think it's very bona fide. There's one amusing story about this type of situation in South Africa. These two young boys, at least while they were young, they watched their father do some puja to someone. He would do it every year. And one year, as they were watching very intently, they saw in the middle of the puja, the father got up, picked up the cat, and tied the cat up to somewhere on the side. So then the father died next year. So the following year, they had to do it. So they did. They were doing the puja. Then they got to that point. Then they quickly went and found the cat, brought the cat in, and tied the cat up. And they thought, yes, this is part of the puja. At this certain point, to invoke auspiciousness, you get the cat and you tie it up. But then the mother said, no, you silly boys, you don't realize that your father was doing the puja, and the cat would come and rub up against his leg. So therefore he would take the cat and tie the cat up. And that was why he did it. But they thought it was part of the puja. So anyway, things are going on like that. It's in the mode of goodness. at least in a general sense, because they're worshipping some demigod. But it's not according to scripture. And at the end of this chapter, Krishna makes it very clear that if you don't do these things according to scripture, or specifically for the pleasure of the Supreme, and you can only really achieve that through following the injunctions of scripture, then it's all useless. It's all completely useless. Anyway, just for the sake of information, Krishna's explaining here. People in the mode of goodness, who will they feel like worshipping? Demigods. Like those of you who are Westerners, you may have heard of Findhorn. Have you heard of Findhorn? In Scotland, they're Western people, English and Scottish people. But because they're in the mode of goodness, to some extent at least, they're in the mode of goodness, then even though they're not following any scripture, but they just somehow became attracted to it's like demigod worship. Just because they felt like it, according to their natures, because they happen to be more in goodness. But if you're in passion, who will you feel like worshipping? Demons. Like who? Rambo? The politicians? Politicians, that's a pretty good example. Or Prabhupada in the purport, actually, he gives an example of a man he knew personally in Calcutta, who during the Second World War made a lot of money through dealing on the black market. So therefore he put a picture of Adolf Hitler on his altar, and he would perform a puja for Adolf Hitler, worshipping a demon. And we know how it goes on. They worship the musical, the singers, the big pop stars. In India they worship the big movie actors. Maybe you'd say they're not really demons, but so many of them are meat eaters and drinkers. And yeah, it's not very good. So it's like that. They'll worship some ordinary human being who happens to be more successful than them. And how do you get to be more successful? By being more hedonistic and just like a heavier materialist. Like that. So that's worship in the mode of passion. They'll feel like that. That'll be their inclination. And if you're in the mode of ignorance, who do you worship? Ghosts and spirits. Like, well, at least in the Indian tradition and, say, the Third World generally. In the Third World, there's so much of this. Throughout India, there's worship of snakes and trees and ghosts. Then there's voodoo. In Africa, you get the same sort of thing. They call it booty. They have this one little person called Tikalosh. Those of you from South Africa, Tikalosh is a cyclops, has one eye, and he's very dangerous, very dangerous. A little ghost, a little like a species of ghost. Yeah, so they do like that. So this is the inclination. They feel like doing that, like that. Or in the Western world they do seances, so-called spiritualism. In South India they do Kavadi. Don't know if any of you are South Indian. They do Kavadi and trance. That's supposedly the spirit of Hanuman takes you over, or the spirit of Durga or someone like that. But actually, at least we feel, it's just a ghost taking them over, making them act like Hanuman, or making them act like Kali. So this is all worship in the mode of ignorance. So that's worship. verses 5 and 6. Krishna talks about people who are really very bad cases. They're really quite extreme. They torture their bodies, like you may have seen people. In India you get some people like this. They take a vow that I will hold my arm up in the air for the rest of my life. And what happens if you do that is that your arm becomes withered. It becomes like a little spindle because the blood can't flow properly and like that. Or some people, they take a vow to keep their fist clenched for the rest of their life. And what happens if you do that is that the fingernails, they eventually grow through the back of your hand. This is pretty demoniac. Some people, they put they cut off their tongue. They put a padlock through their tongue so they can't talk badly. Anyway, you know, it's the material world. People do these crazy things. They take a vow of silence. Well, of course, that's more just like foolishness. They take a vow of silence, but then in conversations, it's not that they don't say anything, but they write down their answer, which takes a lot longer, so, you know, it's just complete foolishness. The Prabhupada said, actually, yes, that's good. Otherwise, they'd simply speak nonsense. So it is better that they keep quiet. In this category, Srila Prabhupada talks about, you'll see there in the first paragraph, people who, for some political end, they take vows. Could any of you think of some famous politician in Indian history who did that? So-called Mahatma Gandhi. Duratma Gandhi. He wasn't really a Mahatma. Prabhupada didn't appreciate Mr. Gandhi much at all. But, of course, the foolish people, they thought he was a Mahatma. Anyway, just for some political purpose, he took a vow of celibacy. And Prabhupada actually said, I don't know if it's here, but Prabhupada said about Gandhi that he got his potency from celibacy. Because he actually took a vow and he stuck to it. Therefore, he became very potent in that way, like in a political way, quasi-spiritual, pseudo-spiritual way. So Krishna is saying this is demoniac. So then Krishna goes on, starting with verse 7, to discuss different types of things, foods, sacrifices, austerities, and charity, according to the modes. That people, depending on what mode they're in, they'll feel attracted. They'll just feel attracted to eating like this or doing different things in different ways because of the particular mode which is mainly governing them in this body. Now this is quite revealing even for ourselves. We can get maybe a little picture of ourselves to some extent by seeing, for example, what types of foods do we like to eat. Food in the mode of goodness is very nice. It increases the duration of life, purifies one's life, gives strength, health, happiness, satisfaction. The foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. It's a very nice, pure, like rich, natural foods. But then verse 9 describes food in the mode of passion. Too bitter, too sour. There go all your pickles and achars out the window. Too salty, too hot. There go your chilies. Pungent, dry and burning. These foods are dear to people in the mode of passion. I remember once a actually it was more than nearly 21 years ago. I think it was the first Indian program I ever went to in England. And the main thing I noticed was they put chili powder in everything. I mean, I'm not saying that this is just a characteristic of Indian people in general, but these people, even the fruit salad, had quite a bit of red chili powder in it. I was kind of trying to figure out why. But they like the taste. They like it. They're attracted. So they must put it there. It won't be complete without. Or some, I used to know one old Indian man, in between meals when he felt like a snack, he'd get a handful of green chilies and just punch away like a dozen chilies at one time. And he thought, oh, very nice. Nice little snack. Or food in the mode of ignorance, leftovers, food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten. Some people, they prefer to wait until, you know, like the next day or sometime later before they eat the food because they feel it gets a better taste. Or like cheeses, Western cheeses, the yellow cheeses. Yellow cheese means cheese which has been allowed to go old. The yellowing occurs through aging. Or they like blue vein. You know blue vein cheeses? Cheese which actually has mold in it. This is in the mode of ignorance. Or meat. Any meat means, I mean naturally it's mode of ignorance, it's not nice, but for meat to be edible for humans, I mean to whatever extent it may be edible, it has to age. Otherwise, apparently, it's too toxic immediately after the animal dies. But they have to let it age and then people will be, otherwise it'll poison the body. So it has to be in the mode of ignorance. Of course, it's already in the mode of ignorance, but even more in the mode. Food which is tasteless, decomposed, putrid, remnants, untouchable things. This is all food in the mode of ignorance, like mushrooms. Some people ask, why don't we eat mushrooms? They're vegetarian. But mushrooms, they only grow in the dark, where it's like moist and dark. And they grow best in stools. So it's in the mode of ignorance. It's a fungus, actually. Or onions. Onions. Onions is more like putrid. It's a taste which lingers and lingers. It lingers on. It's kind of like a foul taste that lingers on. Or garlic. As you all know, if you want to lose friends, and just eat a lot of garlic because it's foul. It's foul. But people are attracted, oh yes, we like garlic, we must have garlic. Then that indicates that they're influenced to quite some extent by the mode of ignorance. So where do we fit in? Anyway, that we can figure out for ourselves. But it's interesting to consider ourselves. Then sacrifice. Sacrifice in the mode of goodness is quite nice. You can see actually how it's conducive to Krishna consciousness. Actually, Krishna says that it's performed even according to the direction of scripture. Although mainly here he's talking about how people are inclined, not specifically that they're acting according to scripture. But the thing is that people in the mode of goodness, they may well be inclined to follow scripture, just according to their nature. They may just be attracted to following scripture. But at least they'll act in a detached way as a matter of duty. They won't want anything from it. But then mode of passion. You perform some sacrifice, but you want something out of it. want some material benefit. This is verse 12. Or out of pride. Some people, they want it. They give a donation that they want a plaque put up. They must have a plaque donated by Mr. Such and Such. And if you don't put the plaque up, they get very angry. So this is pride. Pride. Donation in the mode of passion. Or even, they may be thinking that there's a whole system described in the Vedas. I don't have the details here, although Prabhupada, somewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives a basic outline. That if you give charity, well, that's charity, so we'll wait till we get onto charity for that. So then, sacrifice in the mode of ignorance. No regard for scripture, no distribution of prasad, no chanting of bona fide hymns, no remuneration to the priests. Without faith, it's considered to be in the mode of ignorance. Get that. In South Africa you get that. People do sacrifice, and if they're very poor, then they don't use ghee. They use oil. They offer oil into the fire sometimes. Sometimes if there's not enough wood for the sacrifice, they take some of the wooden chairs that the people are sitting in and break them up and use them for the fire. So it's all just real concoction, mode of ignorance. Then austerity. So, now there are three types of austerities. There's austerity of the body, austerity of speech, and austerity of the mind. So austerity of the body consists of worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmins, spiritual master, superiors, cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, non-violence. Austerity of speech, speaking the truth, speaking pleasingly, beneficially, not speaking in a way to agitate people. Like one devotee made the point, a very nice point, that if you see one cow running down the road and it ducks around the corner and runs away, then a minute later you see one butcher racing after it carrying an axe in his hand. And he asks you, which way did the cow go? But now the cow may have gone that way, but you say, oh, she went that way, the other way. Then this would be truth. This would be considered truthfulness. Because it's beneficial, it's not agitating to the unfortunate cow. It's pleasing. In fact, to speak, sometimes they say the truth hurts, but to speak in such a way that people are harmed, or that, you know, they're like bad repercussions, according to Vedic standards and like traditional standards all over the world, it's always been considered very bad. And to the point that in Europe, like in medieval times, messengers, if a messenger came like from one royal court to the other and then gave some bad news, then he would often be killed just because he brought bad news. So I guess being a messenger was a very risky sort of occupation. But that type of talk is not appreciated at all, even according to Vedic standards. That's why, like, when Arjuna returned from Dwarka after Krishna had left the planet, so he came back to Hastinapur, and Yudhisthira saw that he was completely devastated. But Arjuna didn't just say, Krishna left. It actually took quite a long time before Yudhisthira could get him to the point of saying that. On the grounds of this principle, that to speak in such a way that causes pain or anxiety is not considered to be